Out with the old, in with the old. Locked in the bunker, shadows shake. One man clapping secrets awake. Board games living, dice they break. Echoes pounding, hearts they quake. Welcome to the sound of one man clapping. I am the one man coming to you direct from the bunker. It's the morning after election night here in Australia, and I hurt everywhere. True story. I work elections. I work, it's not volunteer, it's paid work. And because it's extra work, all that beautiful money goes straight into my board game account. So it's time well spent, but it is about a 17-hour day from start to finish. I don't mind. I've spent my whole life in hospitality. But I'm a little old for 17-hour days, so today I'm a little achy. I'm also going to have a Pepsi. This is not an endorsed ad. I just need the caffeine. It is very early Sunday morning. And here we are. I'm here for you, OMC crew. This is a podcast about board gaming culture, and growing old gracelessly. True story. This week we're going to talk about all the games that we're dipping back into FOMO mofo because reasons. We'll take a whimsical trip through my frontal lobe with voices in my head. We'll, of course, be giving someone the clap. Saddle up, OMC crew. Forgive me, clappers. It's been 2 weeks since my last confession. I've coveted my neighbor's board games, slept with his meeples. Twice. This week on the games that were, because it's been a couple of weeks, last week wasn't our regular format, and the week before that wasn't our regular format either. And to be honest, I've had a bit of a flu, right? So I felt like a bag of shit. Not a flaming bag, just a normal bag. You know, it hasn't been that bad. I've been working every day. But I have not felt the best. A little achy, a little moany-groany, and not for good reasons. So haven't been a ton of games over the last couple weeks, if I'm being perfectly honest. Not by choice. Just coming home from work, end of the day, too tired to put anything on the table. And weekends have been busy too. I don't know, like this adulting thing. One star. Do not fucking recommend this shit to anybody. Anyway, did have some good times in the last couple weeks. Got another day-night of Aeon Trespass with Super Trooper. And so you may recall, if you've been listening, you may not be have been listening. If you haven't been listening, that's a very naughty thing to be doing. You should have always been listening from the very beginning. But if you're just getting started, well, welcome. Super Trooper and I have been playing Aeon Trespass. And you may recall, we ended up having a hard fail and having to restart the campaign. We didn't. If you hear noise in the background, I live right next door to the Royal Fire Brigade, and they're doing some kind of training with chainsaws and shit. So normally I can edit stuff out or, you know, dial some stuff down. If you hear something in the background that sounds like somebody's stepping on a feline of some sort, that is the local fire brigade. So my apologies. We're just going to have to suck it. You know, again, not in a good way. So we got a full day night, and by day night, we usually start around 8:30. We usually go till about, ooh, it depends. It's usually 8. If Beelzebubbles is with us, it's about 8 at night. If she's not with us, Beelzebubbles is Super Trooper's, you know, Control-V, Control-C clone and the Peanuts bestie. If Beelzebubbles isn't with us, we can usually go till 10 or 11. But this was a, and Beelzebubbles was here, which is lovely. We love her. She's amazing. So I think we kicked on about 8:30, 8:45 in the morning, and we finished about 12 hours later. And it was it's always fantastic. You know, I'm not going to belabor it. I really think ATO, Aeon Trespass Odyssey, is something special. And from what I understand, most of this came out of the mind of one guy. Now, you know, it's a small company. It's not like there's 20 or 30 of them working on this. This is a spectacularly massive game with an egregious amount of detail in it. And I use egregious as a compliment in this case, you know, which you shouldn't be allowed to do in English, but I am anyway. And we love it every time. Every time we love it, and so we pack it up, we put it away, and we've lost a card. It reminds me. We lost a card. There's a card that we had in our first playthrough, and it got unlocked this time, and I couldn't find it. Let's make a note. I still haven't found that card, Super Trooper. I'm going to find that card. We love it. It's great. It's we spent, I think, the first 4 hours of the day basically going through literally one in-game day, which normally takes, if you don't have a battle, it normally takes about 10 minutes to go through an in-game day, maybe 15. Might be undercooking that a little bit. But I think we spent the first 4 hours of the day going through literally one in-game day because we ended up having two or three skirmish battles, primal battles. I can't remember what they're called. It's so early. I've had so little sleep. Big mini on the table. Four minis getting their ass kicked around it. Whatever that's called in ATO. Oh, I can't remember. Primals? Yeah, it's not my best work today. Sorry, crew. Anyway, I think we did three of them in one in-game day. And it was exhausting, but in a good way. We came up for air at the end of that. We'd survived. Most of what we had survived. And no, it was so much fun. So much fun. So we got a day and night of ATO, and I'm pretty sure we're going to get another one in May, which is awesome. But in the middle of that day, we took a break from that, and we played this ridiculous game. And it's great. We played Fireball Island. I don't want to bury the lead. Super Troopers had Fireball Island for ages. It's one of Beelzebub's favorite games. And we set up Fire... 1986, Fireball Island came out, and that would have made me, 12 years old? There you go. 12 years old when Fireball Island came out. I've never played, right? It's been around that long. I don't think Super Troopers copy is that old. It could be. It doesn't look like it. But Fireball Island, for those that don't know, is this ridiculous thing on the table that you set up. And at certain points in the game, you take these little fireballs and you chuck them in a volcano at the top. And they tumble down the paths and knock people over. And it causes you to lose things. And it is ridiculous. The game is absolutely ridiculous. But it is a ton of fun. It's an absolute ton of fun. You're drafting, not drafting cards, you're drawing cards, you're playing cards. The cards do shit. The kids loved it. And we got the fox to the table for it, you know. And the fox asked us, sit down, you're going to play Fireball. And she's like, oh, I got stuff to do. And I'm like, yeah, one of those things you got to do is play a game. So sit down. Okay, you might be hot, but you don't get to just do whatever you want all the time, princess. So we got princess to the table. Sorry, we got the fox to the table. And we played Fireball Island, and I had a blast. I think I came dead last. I don't even care, right? It was so much fun. All these bits of plastic come out, and you assemble the island, and you put all the little things out, and all the little, they look like little flaming cannonballs. You put the volcano out. It's like a 9-second teach. It's like you play the card, do what the card says, try and get some treasure. Try not to be in a place where you can get knocked over by balls, okay? You don't get knocked over by balls in our house very often, but this is one of those times. And Chuck Kennedy and Bruce Lund created the game in 1986. It's been published by everybody since then. 5 or 6 or 36 publishers. I can't remember. I looked it up. I'm like, oh, too hard. There's way too many publishers over the years. So we played Fireball Island, which was a nice, lighthearted break to a full day of getting our asses absolutely destroyed by Aeon Trespass. And I mentioned this briefly, maybe not so briefly, during the Higvodge, which will be coming around again end of the year. I'm going to do that half yearly. So we're going to do that sort of April, October. So it doesn't line up with Christmas or anything, because, you know, you don't want to ruin your Christmas special with a Higvodge. Who wants a Higvodge at Christmas? But I went down the Zombicide rabbit hole. So I, with all the shenanigans that Simon's going through right now, I decided to buy the retail version of Deceased Gotham City Outbreak, which is kind of it's a half mini, half standee version. It is so fun, right? Like, I love DC. It is so fun. It really is. And there's 10 scenarios in there. They pack a lot into a little box. I think Gotham City Outbreak was like $60 or something. Australian. And $60 Australian can barely get you a deck of cards, right? For those of you that are overseas, like, games are really fucking expensive in Australia. Like, no joke. And so it was like $60. And it came and I opened it up and I played it. And I'm like, oh, this is just so good. You know, when you're playing as Batman and you're pounding zombies and you've got batarangs that can, like, it's, the theme is great. You've got Poison Ivy and Harley Quinn and Lex Luthor, and it was so much fun. And it was so much fun that, you know, and I mentioned this in the Higvodge, I was like, I might just get a retail copy of Marvel Zombies, because this is my jam, right? And we're going to do this a little bit later and voice it in my head. So I played Marvel Zombies, and I played as the superheroes, because of Marvel Zombies. You can also play as the zombies, which is so much fun. It's so awesome. Because if you've played Zombicide, you know every turn your power goes up, you can use the power for certain things. Well, in Marvel Zombies, you get hungrier. And as you get hungrier, your power goes up. But if you get to max hungry, if you get to hangry in Marvel Zombies, then you lose the ability to make certain decisions until you eat a bystander, right? So, and when you eat a bystander, instead of having, you know, in normal sort of Zombicide, if you have a bystander, whatever the case is, they grant you special things. If you eat a bystander, you get their little card, and they give you little superpowers. Marvel Zombies is so much fun. So I play Marvel Zombies, and I have decided that I really like Zombicide. You know, it's one of those things that, again, we're going to come back to this. So went down the rabbit hole with Zombicide for a little bit, which was awesome. And you got a little chainsaw work outside, you catch that? And then I got a quick, Super Trooper does his grocery shopping on Sunday, and often when he's grocery shopping, he segues to the bunker for a couple of hours. Because, you know, shopping can take up to 3.5 hours where we live, with a small detour to play a two-player game of Voidfall, which is what we did. We got a Sunday morning game of Voidfall in. It was just two-player. And Voidfall is a delight at every player count, including one. So we played a two-player game of Voidfall with a map of configuration that we hadn't played before. It was a really interesting configuration that involved a lot of Voidborn, but we started so far away from each other in the map that really we didn't cross paths at all in the entire game. Super Trooper rinsed me. Well, I think he was like 80 points ahead for most of the game. I managed to catch up. I think he only beat me by 25 or 30 at the end. But it was fantastic. Voidfall's amazing. I love Voidfall. Again, this is my shout out to Mr. David Turksey. There's a Voidfall expansion coming middle of the year. Please give me space pirates. I want to be a space pirate with no faction, and I can go around and just, you know, I don't know, steal shit, steal powers. I don't know. I want to be a space pirate in Voidfall. Okay? I'm asking for it. Politely. That's by David Turksey, Nigel Buckle, art by Ian O'Toole, and published by Mind Clash Games. And then the only other game I played in the intervening time, because as I said, I was really feeling trash. I would come home from work and basically be in bed at, you know, 7:45, like the old fucking man that I am. I managed to get Lou to the table, which doesn't happen very often because, you know, she's an adult and busy and, you know, dads are lame. But I got her to the table for a game of Spirit Island. And I hadn't played Spirit Island probably in, I want to say, 3 or 4 months since Super Trooper was here. And he went, hey, can you teach me Spirit Island? I'm like, heck yeah, man. So we played Spirit Island. And I have everything for Spirit Island, including some really funky Etsy bits and a wonderful wooden insert organizer. I have everything for Spirit Island except for the most recent, whatever that was, Nature Incarnate. And to be honest, I don't think I need Nature Incarnate because there is so much now going on with Spirit Island with, you know, Branch and Claw, and I don't have Feather and Flame either, but I think Feather and Flame was just more spirits from memory. Can't recall. But I've got everything else, and I've got two big fat mofo boxes of Spirit Island, and there's a ton of spirits to choose from, a ton of scenarios, a ton of events. So got Lou, we set up a two-player. We got basic spirits. We played with the basic blight rules. We didn't throw events or scenarios on either because, you know, there's a lot going on with Spirit Island. And Lou's a very clever gamer, you know. She loves Lacerda's. She loves heavy, heavy stuff. But this isn't that, you know. If you have not had the joy of Spirit Island, Spirit Island's a co-op game, and it's a co-op strategy game that, by and large, is entirely deterministic. You know, you can actually unpick literally everything that's going to happen on the table, with the one exception of where the invaders are going to explore next. There's a deck of cards that dictates the invaders' movements and actions. So if you know nothing about Spirit Island, you know, you're basically playing two slumbering spirits in a two-player game. Each of you plays a slumbering spirit on this island. You've been there for thousands of years, and all of a sudden the colonists have arrived, and they're harassing the locals. And you wake up, and you are pissed off, and it's your job to drive the invaders off the island. There's a number of different ways you can win. You know, you can win by entirely driving them off the island. You can win by creating so much fear that you go through the fear deck. And the fear deck is a series of cards which are one of the timers for the game. And you unlock them by generating fear. And if you burn through the entire fear deck, you win the game, which is amazing. Always feels good. But there are also a number of ways you can lose the game. If any one spirit is completely destroyed, you lose the game. If the invader's deck, which is a graduated stacked deck, you know, there's level 1, 2, and 3 cards in there. If that deck ever runs out, then the game is also over. So the way it works is you flip the invader deck, and that tells you where they explore. It might say in sandy regions. The next round, they're going to build in those sandy regions. And the round after that, they're going to ravage in those sandy regions. So the only mystery, the only non-deterministic part of Spirit Island at all is what the next card will be for where they're going to explore. And exploring puts more peeps on the map. You then have two rounds, well, a round and a half really, to deal with them before they're going to damage where they are. And it's fantastic. It's fantastic. It's you know, you start with the starting hand of cards that's based specifically on your spirit. Your spirit can unlock different powers as it ages through the game. You can buy new powers, you know, major and minor powers. There are lots of ways and paths you can go down with each and every spirit. We were playing with two very simple spirits, and we did win. We won on the fear deck, which is great. It was really cool to have a win, especially for Lou's first game. And she was really enamored with it. She was like, "This is awesome." So I know I'm going to get it to the table again, and we'll play. We didn't play with Branch and Claw either, because Branch and Claw introduces four different icons and really clever, interesting mechanics for those. And we didn't play with events or scenarios. So I think next game we'll play with events, and we'll play with Branch and Claw. And then if she's keen after that, we'll look at throwing a scenario. And scenarios really ramp up the difficulty of the game. Maybe not so much the difficulty, but the complexity. It gives you another level of things to deal with as you play. Spirit Island is one of my very, very favorite solo games. I have played three-handed. I think my sweet spot for Spirit Island is two-handed solo. You can play single. You can play one spirit, one island, right? I don't find that that's rewarding enough, because oftentimes your spirits are really quite slanted into one sort of group of capabilities or another. And so I really like to try and pick two spirits that complement each other with their different abilities. And I usually play with the scenario and the event deck. So it's complicated. There's a lot of moving parts, but it is a blast. It's, I think, last year on the top 200 solo games list, I think Spirit Island was number one. It's certainly in my top five for solo games, 100%. And I haven't played a lot of games co-op, but I would love to play more. I think Spirit Island is a fucking delight. Spirit Island, if you have even a passing interest in Spirit Island, unfortunately, Greater Than Games, who's the publisher for Spirit Island, is winding down operations. You know, unless you've been living under a rock, you know that the game industry is getting absolutely fisted right now. And it's not an easy industry to begin with. There's the margins are really quite low. And for a lot of companies, it's not that the tariffs are breaking them in half. It's just the straw that's broken the camel's back, you know, because margins are so tight, so low. So Greater Than Games, it's not that they're folding, but they're winding operations down. They're going to continue distributing existing games, and Spirit Island is one of their games. So if you have even a passing interest in Spirit Island, it's very much worth picking up a copy. It may be very hard to get a copy in future. I will, you know, revisit my thoughts on Feather and Flame and Nature Incarnate, because I'd hate to get to a point in 3 or 4 years where I go, "Oh, I really wish I had those now for another layer or for some more stuff." I can see myself easily playing Spirit Island off and on for the next 20 years. It's one of those games that will be timeless. It's one of those games that should be timeless. And I think Spirit Island is a masterwork of game design. Spirit Island is by Eric Royce. Not unfortunately, but there are 15 different artists involved in Spirit Island. I am not going to name them all. And it is, up until today, published by Greater Than Games. There's always the hope that another publisher will pick it up. Spirit Island has a huge following. It is a fantastic game that sells very well in retail. They have previously worked through crowdfunding for their initial releases, so perhaps they'll be back through crowdfunding. That's Spirit Island. Those are the games that were. You have my solemn oath that the next week or two are going to be a much more productive time for games, because I miss my games. You know, being sick and going to bed early is great and all when you're, you know, 51 and achy and have to work for a living, because God damn it, why can't we win the fucking lottery? Oh, the Fox. Maybe I need to get a better job for the Fox. No, her job's pretty good. It couldn't be me. It wouldn't be me that needs the better job. Oh, God. Adulting sucks shit. So yes, the next week or two, ideally, we'll have more games. More games, more games, more games. Welcome to FOMO Mofo, where I take you through my personal angst-ridden journey of capitalist acquisitionism. As always, this is not an exhaustive list of crowdfunding projects, but merely those that have my personal attention, either because they are by a design and development team I like, a theme I enjoy, or because they have pretty toys. Sometimes it's all three. So the crowdfunding train is full steam ahead. It seems like tariffs are a thing, but they're not a thing. I mean, I can't even tell anymore. They're in the news. I mean, every other podcaster, YouTuber, broadcaster, news outlet is talking about tariffs, tariffs, tariffs. I think what we're coming to discover very quickly is that because of the nature of crowdfunding, dealing with tariffs is a very easy thing. And I'm saying easy in quotes, easy compared to trying to import a shipping container of stuff that you haven't yet sold and have to then hold and pay up front for. Some of the commentary from some of the key game designers and distributors out there are like, well, we're going to lean more heavily into crowdfunding because crowdfunding can sustain tariffs. And it makes sense to me. Crowdfunding, you've sold the game, you've charged your client, you've charged your consumer, you've charged your end user for the tariff in question. In retail, you've got to bring 10,000 copies of the game in, you've got to pay the tariffs up front, you've got to take that bill right in the dark and stormy and wait until you sell the games to get it back, right? It actually makes a lot of sense. So it seems like crowdfunding has just gone, you know what, Captain Cheeto, we don't care about your tariffs, we're just going to add it on here. And in reality, because tariffs are only on the manufacturer price or the manufacturer cost of games, it's not a lot for me, the end user. You know, if a game, if I'm buying a $100 game, it's got a $20 manufacturer cost. That means it's going to be basically an extra, unfortunately, $28. So the menu, but they're not looking to make margin on those tariffs. They're saying, well, you in the US, you're going to pay that extra $28 if you want the game. And I think that's perfectly reasonable. It's not like normally, you know, you pay a 5x markup on the cost of a game. They're not looking to make a 5x markup on the tariff. They're just looking to get the tariff paid so they can put the game in your hand. Perfectly reasonable. I mean, it doesn't affect me. I'm in Australia. It doesn't affect me today anyway. We've just had an election. Who knows what'll happen? I can tell you right now, our leaders aren't crazy bonkers enough to start a trade war with China. But, you know, weirder shit's happened. So anyway, the crowdfunding train, it seems to be shoveled full of coal that has been converted from wood, which was converted from trees. And the workers seem to be on the go space. So we're all good. Crowdfunding is still going very strong. There's a lot of really good campaigns coming. And so for me, I guess we'll start with some of the stuff that I haven't yet backed, because I've backed a couple new campaigns, which I'm really excited about. But let's talk about Earth Animal Kingdom. Earth Animal Kingdom is an expansion to Earth, which is kind of a Wingspan-ish tableau builder. It's I actually think I like Earth more than Wingspan. That might be a hot take, I don't know. But Earth is a lot of fun. And I think that one of the reasons Earth is so fun is it's simultaneous play. And everyone chooses an action. Then everyone else gets kind of a lesser version of that action. Very common mechanic. But it's a really interesting thing because you've got to build a 4x4 tableau. And where the cards go is where they stay. Much like a lot of your other tableau builders, but they also hinge off each other for costing based on their geographical location, their real estate. Holy shit. Sorry, I'm just looking at the campaign. I just realized there's a Laser Rocks crate for Earth. That's pretty cool. Not that Earth has a lot of weird parts and stuff, but just looking at it. So Earth Animals, Animal Kingdom. I wasn't interested in this particularly, but maybe I am. Not surprisingly, animals. Little wooden animeeples. And what they do is they come out and they actually go into your tableau and they can actually walk around the tableau and they do different things based on where they're going, which actually is a pretty cool mechanic. I've never played Earth and felt like it needed more. Earth is like Wingspan or like Ark Nova. You have a gazillion cards. I've never, ever played Earth and gone, oh, I've seen that card so many times. I'm so sick of that bloody card. I mean, I've only played Earth 6 or 8 times. It's got a pretty good solo system, which I haven't used, but I probably should because it's got a pretty good solo system. But Earth, if you like throwing animals onto Earth, you know, you can do that. It's not very expensive. It's like $28 US. So what's that? $42 Australian? Perfectly reasonable for an expansion. $42 for any sort of thing in Australia is perfectly reasonable. Shipping to Australia is, another, okay, maybe not so. Shipping to Australia is another $30 on top of a $32 game. So, God, I can't have that right. 21 US shipping? So $21 US shipping. So that's $32 Australian shipping for a $44 game. Ugh. God, where are they making it? Fucking Mars? Yeah, I don't know. Look, I wasn't interested. I had a vague interest when I saw the cool little Laser Rocks box for it. But I'm not convinced that a $21 US shipping for, you know, a $29 game is anything less than crazy. But I wish them well, because Earth was a good game. On from there is a shitty game about shitty things. And I just like the idea of this. This is a game called Night Soil. It's a game about sanitation in Tudor London. You know, and let's be clear, there was no sanitation in Tudor London, right? Like, literally zero. This is a game I don't know much about, except that, the story of the game itself. Night Soil was the friendly term for the shit in a bucket. You know, you'd put your night soil out. Your night soil was what you did in the night. They called it night soil, and it was collected in the morning. Sometimes it was thrown out the top story window. I mean, God, those are the times, right? Anyway, I just like the idea. I like the name. I don't know if it's a good game. I don't even care if it's a good game. They've made a game about shoveling poop, which is just hilarious. Check it out. It's got interesting art. It's got a cool kind of art style about it. It's $18 shipping US. So it's a $55 game with $18 shipping, so it's like a 30% shipping. But look, these are the sorts of games, and all games, I think, eventually, in a very short order, are going to become these sorts of games, in quotes, where crowdfunding is going to be the place to get these things. The global retail space is going to get tighter and tighter, thanks to our good friend in the oral office. While we don't, as I said, I keep saying we don't have a tariff issue in Australia, we will be suffering the same issues in that if game companies are deciding not to go to retail specifically because the retail market, while it's not a US market, the Americans having 300 million plus consumers play a large part in retail distribution for board games, there'll be more and more games that potentially aren't going to go to retail at all. I don't think that's a bad thing. You know, I think it's going to increase the value of the secondhand market of games. If the scarcity of games is good for secondhand games for sale, then that's going to be great for me in about 10 years when I look around the bunker and go, oh, I have 400 games and I need to sell some of them. But Night Soil, it's a game about poop. Everyone would love a game about poop. Next one up, Flamecraft Duels. Now, Flamecraft is a really fun little game. When I say little game, it's not a little game. It's Cardboard Alchemy, so it's, of course, it's gorgeous. The art's amazing. You know, he's got little dragons that are going to the shops and buying bread and buying meat and just doing very mundane things with great little coins. And look, Flamecraft is super fun. Flamecraft Duels, D-U-A-L-S, involves dragons that have, you know, multiple types. It's designed by Manny Vega, art's by Sandra Tang. Sandra Tang does a lot of the art for Cardboard Alchemy. She's also done, I believe, Critter Kitchen of recent release. And Flamecraft Duels, it looks amazing. If I wasn't convinced, and I mean absolutely convinced, like as in no doubt that Super Trooper is picking this up, I would be looking at it very seriously for my collection because it is super cute. And I think the peanut would eat this up. As it is, I'm 100% convinced that Super Trooper would be picking this up because his household loves Flamecraft. I think Flamecraft is Flamecraft Duels Deluxe. It's only $30 US, right? So it's not a huge box. It's only a two-player. It's only a two-player game. I mean, how expensive could it be for a two-player game? There's a lot of production in the box. But for $30 US, I think it's a bargain. Shipping to Australia is a very sedate $18. So it's $18 Australian for shipping. It's about $40, $45 Australian for the game. That's a deal, right? If you're getting any kind of board game in Australia for $60, $70, you are well ahead of the curve. On to one of my faves. We've got a new expansion and a 10-year anniversary edition for Tricarion. Tricarion is the game of battling magicians in a kind of diesel punk. I don't even know what the era is. It's like a diesel punk renaissance era. The art is awesome. It's gritty and dark. It's like Jack the Ripper era. It's like 1890, 1900. I don't know if I've got that right, but that's how it feels. And Tricarion, you are battling magicians. You're developing tricks. You're performing tricks, and you can even sell tricks to Dalgard's Academy, which is like a school for magicians. And if you sell the trick, you can no longer perform the trick because everyone knows the secrets, but you get regular income from that trick. It sits in the school, and every time someone goes to the school, then you get income for it. Tricarion is fantastic. It is heavy as fuck. I don't know what it's rated on Board Game Geek, but it should be like 4.4 or something. And it's a long game. I don't think you can get in and out of Tricarion in less than 3 hours. But there's a 10-year anniversary edition, so you can get everything Tricarion if you want. It is 150 euros, so what's that, 225 Australian? Which, to be honest, for the amount of game, the amount of stuff that is in that box, because you've got metal coins and wooden bits and game trays, and the game trays for the Tricarion, I have the Tricarion Collector's Edition, which is fantastic. The game trays are excellent. The storage is excellent. And I think the shipping is only, It's $27 or something. So you're looking at a $225 game for $27 shipping, which is just over 10% for a game that is, I mean, a box that is going to have the replay on Tricarion is fantastic if you can get people to the table. I must confess, I've only played Tricarion solo. It is a bit of a beast solo. The solo is excellent, but it is a bit of a beast. As I said, even solo, I think it was a 2.5 hour game. But the gameplay and the decision space and the different types of workers you have and the different spaces you can go, Tricarion is excellent. So there's a new expansion for Tricarion. I think it's called Arcane Arts, which adds a new module that you can throw on. It's 47 euros, I think, maybe. Or maybe that's what I've packed. This is the upgrade pack. 35 euros. It's 35 euros, which is about $60 Australian. And that gives you the new insert, four new custom standing pouches for your draw bags, the new secret workshop, the new Arcane Arts expansion, and a new game tray, which allegedly will all fit into the collector's edition box. I don't know whether that by fit, in quotation marks, we're going to get, you know, 5 centimeters of lid lift. I'm not horribly fussed if that's the case, if it all kind of fits in there. It's not great news, but if it does have lid lift, I can live with that. But they haven't said it's going to fit in there with lid lift, so they must be replacing one of the trays in there in its entirety, I would think, to get everything in. But it's, you know, it's $60 Australian. It's costing me $18 in shipping, and I love Tricarion. Tricarion was on my token aspirations goals for this year, one of the games I really wanted to get off the shelf and get to the table. I don't know if I will. I mean, it's only May. I just look back at my token aspirations. I'm like, dude, you were delusional. You're going to get all those games out. Man, maybe. But Tricarion is awesome. If you love that sort of steampunk art theme, if you love complex Euros, it's not Lacerda level complex, but there's a lot of moving parts and you've got to have all your moving parts moving together or it doesn't come undone, but you really can't get anything done. Tricarion's a delight. Next on my list is Nippon Zaibatsu. Now, Nippon is an older game. I say older, 10 years, something like that. And it's a game of Japanese development. And when I say development, it was a time in history when Japan looked around the world and said, oh, sorry, I was going to put a Japanese accent on there. I'm like, that's so fucking racist. You can't do that, dude. And I was okay. Japan looked around the world and went, oh, we are very behind. Okay, sue me. They looked around the world and they decided that Japan, from an economic and industrial position, were behind the rest of the world. And they put a plan in place to catch up. And they caught up in spades in a very short period of time. And that's what this game is about. And I've looked at when Nippon was announced, I'm like, oh, Nippon, it's a Japanese game. Looks fine. The gameplay is set to to mimic that pace, right? So I've watched the gameplay and I've read some of the rules and whatnot. The gameplay is so sharp and so quick, and the pacing of the game is so quick that you feel that frenetic pace of racing to catch up. You're developing out factories. You're building trade routes. You're competing ferociously with your opponents at the table for different things on the table. And not only that, man, it looks so good. Nippon Zaibatsu looks really good. Like just the production of it, the art style, the components. It looks gorgeous. I have back Nippon. It was a very reasonable $120. Shipping's about another 35 Australian. So again, see, as long as I'm staying sort of in and around that 25%, I'm happy. I have paid more than that for shipping. I probably will again. But it's about 25% shipping. And to be honest, you know, a game for $120 of this quality, this caliber, and this production is insane in this day and age. Particularly, you know, this is a game that is launched, you know, in the throes of tariffs. And I'm sure they've got a comment in there about, well, if you're in the US, these are the considerations, but you know, more power to them. This was, I think Paul Grogan said it's one of his favorite games of all time, the original. So that's always interesting too. I appreciate Paul's opinion on many things, board games being the number one. So Nippon Zaibatsu, it's actually, allegedly, again, going to actually deliver this year, I think. It's coming later this year. So they must be really a long way along their development. And it looks amazing. Check it out. I only have one more this week. And that is, it's over in GameFound. And this is, again, it's another reprint. This is the second edition. It's another Awakened Realms monstrosity, and I've got to be perfectly frank, I'm a big fan of Awakened Realms monstrosities. You know, the Castles of Burgundy monstrosity, I keep calling them monstrosities, the Castles of Burgundy Deluxe Edition is wonderful. It's a wonderful production of the game, and while I can imagine that the game would still be great in its original form, it's the tactile, chonky, beautiful version of it that gives it the chef's kiss for me. You know, Castles of Burgundy is a great game. It really is. You roll that Steffenfeld classic of you roll your dice and you've got to do something with those dice from a worker placement point of view. And it's excellent. The game is excellent. But the Awakened Realms version with the acrylic tiles and the little castles and the plastic overlays for your duchy that keep everything in place and the vineyards and the wooden chonky resources that you trade, it's beautiful. I really like it. Project L has backed Puerto Rico, which I'm delighted about because it saved me having to do it. It was in my box, in my card. It was out of my card. It was like the hokey fucking pokey for like 8 weeks. You put it in your cart, you take it out of your cart, you put it in your cart, and you slap yourself in the face. And yeah, it was there. And it was like, and then Project L went, oh, I've backed Puerto Rico. I'm like, thank fuck. That's, yes! $300 I can save for this War of Mine second edition, as it turns out. So this War of Mine is a board game based on, I think originally it was an iOS game. That's how I remember playing it on the iPad. And I played quite a bit of it because this War of Mine was this really gritty narrative, kind of choose your own adventure. And it wasn't a horribly deep game from a video game point of view. I mean, when I say deep, you were making choices. And the choices all had consequences, you know, and it was like somebody's come to, you're in a war-torn city. They don't name the city, obviously, for reasons. And you're in a bombed-out building, and the building's a wreck. And so the first thing you got to do is, well, it's like Walking Dead, I got to go find a can of food. So you find a can of food, and then it's like, well, I got to get the can of food open. I don't remember if that's the thing, but that's how I remember it feeling. It was this very sort of mundane step-by-step of I've just got to get through the day, and then you've got to go out at night to scavenge for stuff, or some dude comes knocking at the door and he's injured and he's asking for help, and you open the door and, you know, maybe he tries to kill you, or you open the door and he's like, yeah, I've got a bag of food, I'm happy to share, thanks for help, or you open the door and then he like steals all your food in the night. It was not a happy game, I'm going to give you that. Like, this War of Mine is not a happy game. But it's also not, you know, and I haven't played the board game. I want to say the board game was 2014. I'm going off memory. So if I've got that wrong, sue me, you know. But this War of Mine, from an iOS kind of game, I really enjoyed. Because you'd open up, you play it, and a game might last an hour. It might last an hour and a half. It might last 30 minutes if you're dead. But the board game really looks great. And the reason I love the look of it is it's the kind of experience that I mean, and don't get me wrong, my understanding is you can play it cooperative, but I don't think I ever would. It's like Frostpunk. You know, Frostpunk's one of those games where nothing ever goes well. It's just it's a game of attrition. It's a game of getting sadder and sadder and deader and deader. And that doesn't sound like fun. And maybe fun's the wrong word for it. But it is interesting and it is engaging. And what they've done with this War of Mine second edition looks fantastic. And again, it's Awakened Realms. So it's getting, you know, the Awakened Realms second edition treatment where everything's getting ooh la la, you know, just a little bit more. The minis are great. I've gone in for the playmat as well because it's all about having cards out on the table in different spots. You know, you've got your bombed out building and, you know, you can place cards over it to develop it, for example. The playmat looks great. It's got a great, dark, bombastic look and feel. And yep, this War of Mine, man, I'm really happy with it. It looks great. I'm very excited. It is going to ship in like November 2026. So yay, stretch pay, because I don't have to drop $300 today for something in a year and a half. And this War of Mine, like, if you just want the standard edition, it's like $90 Australia, right? Lots of people like standee editions or basic editions. You know, I'm not, you know, it's, I call it the unplayable edition. But when you look at it, it's kind of like my movie popcorn pricing. They've got the standard edition for 65 euros and they've got the deluxe edition for 95 euros. It's like, well, I'm sure they do that for that very reason. You know, you can look at it, you can go, well, the standard edition has been pledged 422 times. The deluxe edition has been pledged 1,500 times. And now, a lot of those people I know, clappers out there, I don't want to make light of anyone's personal situation. There are a lot of people that will be pledging for the standard edition because that's what they can afford, right? And I actually think it's wonderful that companies like Awakened Realms have this entry point. I know that their pricing differential between the standard and the deluxe is very strategic in that, you know, most people look at 30 euros and go, there's so much in there for 30 euros. I'm going to cop the 30 euros. But the fact that you can actually get the game in its entirety, the game experience is exactly the same for, 30 euros less. That's like, what's that? It was like $50 Australian less. I think it's fantastic. I also think a 95 euro for the core, they're calling the core version, which is their deluxe version, in 2025, that is extraordinarily reasonable, right? It's so reasonable. And their stretch goals that have come out thus far, it's only day 9 or something of the campaign, but the stretch goals that have come out this far are not the, well, you've got the deluxe edition, but it's actually deluxe light, because here's now the deluxe pieces. And well, you've got cloth bags, but here's the cloth bags with gold filigree embroidered in them. And you've got the dual layer board, but here's the hex layered board with gold sperm inlay from wild white rhinos. You know, they're not, at least not yet. Every stretch goal that's come out has pretty much been, here's a stretch goal. Here's, some of them have been quality of life upgrades. I'm going, this was Shazam. Here's our stretch goal. It's a quality of life upgrade. And we're actually not charging anymore for it. It's going in the deluxe version. So I'm seeing that as, well, we're going to make that deluxe version just a little shinier in the hopes that some of the people that are on the basic version move over to the deluxe version. It's a very, very tried and tested marketing technique. I really like the looks of this War of Wine. This War of Wine. Fuck, that would be a good game. Let's play that. Super Trooper, it's on Saturday. This War of Wine. It's a two-player game. We have a bottle each, and it's a race and a battle. This War of Mine, I really enjoyed the iOS game. I think the gameplay for this looks fantastic. It doesn't look as, it's not as thinky or as puzzly as something like a Frostpunk, but it's a lot grittier. It's a lot darker. And that narrative that's in there is something that I'm really, really excited for. I can't be too excited though, because it's like a year and a half to wait. So I'm in for the deluxe and the playmat. And I think I even took the acrylic markers because they look great. They weren't too expensive. This War of Mine. That's all I'm really sort of tracking that's live right now. There's some really good stuff coming. There's a lot of campaigns. I think there's 2 or 3 campaigns opening next week that are really interesting that I have been following. I'm not going to go down the rabbit hole of getting too far ahead on those, because otherwise I forget what I've talked about and I bore you shitless because I'm... Hammers, you're talking about this War of Mine again? That was the Elder Scrolls issue, wasn't it? You know, we're not going to talk about Elder Scrolls anymore until we are. Until I've played a couple more campaigns, then we're going to do a deep dive, and then I will fangirl all over the table for your pleasure, right? But for now, that's all I'm really sort of tracking. That's all I've really sort of backed. That's all that's sort of coming in. Up and coming, though, like, I don't want to talk about all the up and coming stuff, because there's a lot of up and coming stuff. But one of the games I think I'm most excited for this year is a Stonemaier Games product. It's called Vantage. It is a very different style of game, you know. And if you haven't looked at Vantage, go have a peek. I know a lot of people are Stonemaier fangirls. And there's, you know, I've met a couple that have gone, oh, Stonemaier Games. Ugh. And look, I like a lot of Stonemaier's output. I don't like it all, but I like a lot of it. And I think they produce very high quality games. And all the games that I own by Stonemaier, I thoroughly enjoy. But Vantage is basically, it's a co-op game where you are dumped down on a planet, you're all sitting around the table, and you draw a card, and the card has a bit of scenery on it. And you're the only one that can see your card. That's your vantage point of where you are. And there are things you have to do and achieve, and no one else can see your cards. And you get more cards as you move around, as in you look at your card, and you're going to move to a certain point in the card, and it's going to give you a new card that you're looking at. I don't know much beyond that. You know, there's been some spoiler-free gameplays. And to be honest, I don't care. I just think the premise is really, really cool. And so I'm really excited for Vantage. And allegedly, that's going to go live probably June, July. It's already on the water. He's already shipping it, from is my understanding. So the way he tends to work, Stonemaier works, is the games get pre-ordered when they're ready to go. They're already in the factory. He's not saying, well, pre-order, and maybe you'll get it next year. He's like, well, do a pre-order. We've got it, and we'll be launching in 3 weeks. So I'm very excited for Vantage. That concludes this week's FOMO Mofo, of which I am one. Boxes on the doorstep, new delights inside. Heaven's on fire, feels to divide. This week on Incoming! 4 exclamation marks is a bit of a lull. Postman Pete's got time to get his back surgery after the, you know, the games that were through January and whatnot. There's this weird spot in the year right now where I don't have any crowdfunding really delivering, and I haven't got a lot of pre-orders out. I have pre-ordered, I think I talked about this in the Higvodge, I have pre-ordered the Kalamala Deluxe reprint. Kalamala looks really cool in the gameplay. It's an older game, obviously, right? It's been around a long time. There's been a deluxe reprint. Kalamala looks great. I have pre-ordered that. And Dragon Eclipse, which was another Awakened Realms monstrosity, which I did not back. Just because, to be honest, the gameplay, it just didn't, the style, the art, it didn't do a lot for me. But I did, just luckily, I entered a contest. I won a copy. Now, it is the standee copy. But the standee box, it's still like an 8-kilo box. I haven't opened it yet. Because I'm like, oh, it looks great. I don't know if I'm ever going to play it. It's not really my style of game. But then the reviews are fantastic. And it's got a campaign and it's co-op. It's a two-player co-op-ish sort of thing. So I'm thinking maybe I just tuck it in the corner. And when the peanuts, because, you know, the art's fine. There's nothing wrong with it. It's just not my kind of thing. Maybe we'll play with the peanut. We'll see. It's here on the shelf. And thank you to Board Game Revolution and Thomas Covert and the team over there. I entered one of their draws and I won the game and it came. It's a real thing, and I'm very grateful. Voices in my head, I'm talking to myself. What board game should I get down off the shelf? This week in Voices in My Head, the time when we all sit down on, I lie down on the leather couch and I pour out to you the inane conversation that I have with myself on a day-to-day basis. So welcome, and we're going to speak in this tone for the whole time because it's soothing and calm, and no, we're not, but okay. So Voice in My Head. Guys, this week I am officially coming out of the closet. I'm 51 years old, and it's time. I think that everyone knows that as much as I also hate them, there are times when I just love chucking a fistful of dice. Okay, so yeah, I'm a closet chucker. If you look around the bunker, I actually had to run some filters on my board game collection in BGG to make sure I was even reasonably accurate. If you look around the bunker, I've got about 150 euros. I've got about 24 lightweight family things. And I have 2 Ameritrash dice chuckers. Okay, and I have 2 Ameritrash dice chuckers that I really like. And, you know, they're by the same company. They're by Simon. They're both by Simon. And so today we're going to talk about Ameritrash dice chuckers and the pure, unbridled joy of not having to give a shit about wood and barrels of oil and gold pieces and converting fish into mushrooms so they can be traded for slaves who then go and build your tents that you can then have a circus in. But you can't have a circus there if the elephants have already been used, because the elephants can only be used once per round. But have you got the 3 potions you need? Because if you don't have the 3 potions, you can't do any of it. And don't get me wrong, I fucking love a Euro. I just love it. But Cthulhu, Death May Die, and Zombicide are, they're like, man, they're like, and I don't want to make light of drug use. It's not my intent, because many of us have been touched by drug use, but they're kind of like meth. You know it's wrong, but it's like, oh, just give me some. Just give me some. So Cthulhu, Death May Die, let's start there. Cthulhu, Death May Die, I only have 2 seasons of. I say only. There is so much content in 2 seasons of Cthulhu Death May Die. I think Coop owns everything Cthulhu Death May Die. He just finished painting the 12-foot-tall Cthulhu mini that actually sits at the end of the table and you have to offer it sacrifices during the game. So Super Trooper and Coop, this is one of the things that bubbled to the surface, were playing Cthulhu Death May Die a fair few times over the last few months. And in Cthulhu Death May Die, you are doing the wackiest shit imaginable. Right? Like, and I'm talking like, there's one mission where I think you've got to strap a bomb to a moose and send it off into the foray to blow up. Like, blah. I think there was one, it was one of the weapons I created was, I doused a monkey on with petrol and threw it into a flaming room and it exploded. I may have that wrong. That may be a Simpsons episode. Yeah. Burn the helper monkey. That sounds like maybe I'm confusing things. It was the Mandela effect. There are some wild missions, though. In Cthulhu, Death May Die. Don't get me wrong. There are some wild missions. And you can play it solo. It's no problem. You can run two, three, four characters of Cthulhu, Death May Die. It's like, what am I doing on my turn? I think you get three actions. You know, you're going to move, and you're going to do something, and you're going to roll some dice. And as you get damaged or you get crazy, you get more powerful. So it's in your interest to get in trouble early, because you get in trouble early and you get more powerful and you get to throw more dice. And the more dice you throw, the more the issues with, you know, dice chucking are mitigated. And I'm not talking about mitigated by a card or mitigated by a superpower, but just the more dice you throw, the less chances of having all shitty dices, you know. And Cthulhu Death May Die is so much fun. You set it up, you pull out your peeps, you pull out your scenario out of a box, you choose your great old one, you choose the gooply you're going to fight in the game, and it all merges together in this wild, awesome, fun time where you are throwing dice for the sake of throwing dice. And it's not like, you know, in ATO where we throw dice and it's like, well, I've got these tokens in there, so they're going to mitigate that, and I've got this piece of equipment, and it's going to make sure that if I actually throw these dice, it's going to help me out, and we've got this little extra power over there, so we're okay. You know, because as a general rule, I don't like dice. You know, ISS Vanguard had a lot of dice, right? And the interesting thing about ISS Vanguard is that you had pools of cards and pools of powers that made bad dice into good dice if you threw them. So you could upgrade all of your people that are out in ISS Vanguard, and you could also increase your pool of dice and specialize your pool of dice in ISS Vanguard. So they weren't like D6s that you're just chucking. You know, and we talk about something like Andromeda's Edge, where you're chucking dice as a battle resolution as well. You know, you're throwing dice for the bad guys, and whoever rolls the single highest die wins. But you've also got ships that have special powers that add extra dice, or you've got a card in your hand that makes a bad die into a good die, or, you know, if all the dice are bad, you immediately flee the conflict. You know, there's lots of different ways to mitigate it. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about a game where you're purely throwing dice, and if you don't have a good roll, you're fucked. That's Cthulhu Death May Die. It's also Zombicide. So Zombicide, you're throwing dice to open doors. You're throwing dice to break open boxes and search things. You're throwing dice to attack people, or people. Yeah, it could be people if you're playing Marvel Zombies. You're throwing dice to attack zombies. And in Zombicide 2nd Edition, you're throwing dice, and if one of the die faces come up, it breaks your fucking weapon. So you got a weapon, and you're like, I'm throwing these dice, and it's like, oh, yeah, my weapon broke. Like, crap, that is so shit. But you don't even care, right? You're talking about these two Seamon monstrosities. They're dice-chucking, Ameritrash, glory-hole-loving monsters. The games are so non-serious. And I think that's the thing I love, because I love serious games. I love converting wood into coal, into oil, into recycled dinosaur bones that then go into a museum, which give you prosperity. And if you have enough prosperity, then you can grow trees, which you can cut down for more. I love that shit. I love that shit. I love that Anachrony has time travel in it, but it's really just a bank. You know, an Anachrony is like, well, I'm going to go back in time and give myself this resource. And if I don't pay it back by a certain time, we're going to have a time paradox and things go wrong. Yeah, we call that I borrowed money from the mob and I didn't pay it off. And so Vinny came and broke my fucking kneecaps. But it's couched in time travel. I love that. I love it. I love heavy Euro bullshit. Right? I love it. Right? You know, it's one of those things, though. Ameritrash gets shit on and it gets shit on and it gets shit on. And, you know, I'm happy to shit on Ameritrash. There's some Ameritrash I look at and I go, ugh, no. Roll to move, I will still to this day, it's like, roll to move, it's like, why? You know, okay, I get when you're four, roll to move makes sense, because you can't make a salient decision to save your life, you're still shitting your pants. But Zombicide and Cthulhu Death May Die, they're both on my shelf, and I went from one box of Zombicide, which was deceased, Gotham City Outbreak, to what? 2, 3, 4, 5 boxes of Zombicide, and they're all different and they're all great. And the wonderful thing about stuff like Zombicide and Cthulhu Death May Die is there's a lot to choose from, and it's entirely modular. And you can pick and choose your flavors. You know, if Zombicide Second Edition isn't your thing, you can do Zombicide Black Plague, which is medieval, and even throws like, I haven't played it, but I think it throws like potions and magic into it. You can play Zombicide Deceased, where you're superheroes, you know, and you've got Poison Ivy, who's using entanglement, and you've got Marvel zombies, and you've got White Death just came out. Okay, so this is the latest CMON. Zombicide White Death has just been released. It's delivering. This was their most recent. It's in the same sort of parallel universe. Let's say parallel universe, same sort of timing as Black Plague. It's all snowy. You've got Invaders, which is basically Marvel zombies, but it's alien instead. And, you know, it looks fine. It looks fine. You know, you're chucking dice, you're killing aliens. It's not enormity. You know, that's going to be my alien game of choice, I'm telling you right now. But Zombicide, I have picked up the second edition, Marvel Zombies, and there are, I think, four campaign boxes. So I'm keen to try one of the campaigns. Again, all solo, right? I don't care if anyone else at the table. I could play four players in Zombicide, no problem. The decision space is so light. You can do three things, and that's three moves, or two moves and try and open a door, or one move and open a door and try to shoot something. There's like no brain power. I mean, it's a puzzle. Because it's like, do I open the door now? Because as soon as you open the door, everything spawns, and if shit spawns, you're in all kinds of grief. So I'm not saying there's no puzzle. It's not voidful. But the puzzle at running four characters is wonderful because you put it on the table, there's no one sitting behind you going, hurry up, motherfucker, make a decision. And you can just put it out and you do your thing. It doesn't go well very often. You know, I was playing Zombicide last week, Deceased, and it went very badly for poor Alfred. You know, at the end of the game. And there's a hard finish. Some of the versions of Zombicide, you know, for example, there's a hard finish. One character dies, game's over. Oh, that's just pretty bad news. You know, not all of them. I think second edition was the same. But, like, I'm a closet dice chucker, as it turns out. Don't judge me, okay? I'm still a human being. That's a quick trip through voices in my head this week, guys. As I started the day with, I'm really tired. So, while it may not be my best work, it might also be my very best work today. And that concludes this week's therapy session. Thank you, OMC crew, for your silent approval of everything I do. You're all enablers, and I love you for it. I'm optimistic that I'll have another great interview lined up in the next few weeks. If you missed last week's chat with the legends at So Very Remote Games, you still have time before the free access expires, and you'll have to pay to subscribe because I will be way too famous to give this shit away for free. It's coming. 2032. All right, subscription only. You've got until then to look back at the back catalog. And also, if you enjoyed that interview, go back a few more to the previous interview with Paul Grogan. I did a wonderful interview with Paul Grogan of Gaming Rules. He was my very first guest on the show. I have hopefully a few people who are a little more local, but also legends coming up in the month of May. You can reach me on all the socials. Find me on Facebook by searching One Man Clapping. If you shoot me a like, that would be fantastic because if I can get my actual likes up, it's not about engagement anymore, but if you get to certain amounts of likes, you can do cool things like, you know, live broadcasting on Facebook. You can reach me on One Man Clapping, WON Man Clapping, as in I won all the games, WON Man Clapping at gmail.com. You can help OMC by leaving me a review on whatever platform you choose. If it's a bad review, I can take it. I have three daughters. They tell me I'm shithouse all the time. Thank you as always for your time. Your time is precious, and the fact that you chose to waste an hour of it listening to how I spend my time is always humbling. Till next time, get your game on, even if you've got to play with yourself. And just remember, it's not a sin if you don't get caught. If God is watching, that makes him a voyeur. That's not your problem. Peace out, mofos. You disgust me.